This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I'm Anna Garcia with True Crime News, the podcast. Every crime tells a story. Every story demands justice. True Crime News, the podcast, covers breaking crimes, investigating high-profile and under-the-radar cases. Every week, we dive beyond the headlines, exploring the effects of violent crimes on victims and search for justice. We hope you join us as your weekly source for true crime news. Listen to and follow True Crime News, the podcast, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Getting you ready for today's game with the Wade Ford Tailgate Show.
A complete look around the NFL and its Falcons.
Let's go out there and compete. Let's focus in on what our job is and do our job.
The Wade Ford Tailgate Show on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game is presented by Wade Ford, Atlanta's Ford dealer, and is brought to you in part by Hatfield Pork Products, the W Sauce, and Shake Shack.
This is the Wade Ford Tailgate Show.
On the home for our Falcons, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Now, here's John Fricke and Joe Patrick.
It is a brisk morning in Atlanta and a big, critical football Sunday for the Atlanta Falcons. Today, the much talked about, as we've talked about all week, debut of Michael Penix Jr. as the starting quarterback of your Atlanta Falcons, and the Falcons in a must-win at home against the New York Giants. And welcome to the Wade Ford Tailgate Show. John Fricke alongside our Falcons insider Joe Patrick. We are outdoors outside Mercedes-Benz Stadium. If you hear that rumble, that is the heater. You are welcome to join us. And by the way, if you come down here and join us, you'll be the only one.
Right? Yeah, no kidding. Can't blame anybody for staying in the warmth this morning.
We had a game, I don't know, remember where we were about a month, 5 weeks ago or something, and this place was packed and it was jumping. Today, not so much.
Not so much. You know, I was thinking on my way over here, like, it's hard to make that transition into the winter months where you're going, like, you got to change the tailgating, you know, accoutrement and everything. Like, you got to transition from cold drinks to hot drinks at some point, and when right. does that actually come? Yeah, the hot food and everything. So, but we should have a hot game for, you know, an exciting new-look Falcons offense tonight.
All right, let's talk about that because it is the big discussion. You and I have talked about it this week, Joe. Let's begin right there with the lead headline here. Michael Penix Jr., what are you hearing from the team? What are you expecting from him today? What are you hearing when he talks about, you know, being excited about getting this opportunity to be a starting quarterback in the NFL?
I think it's exciting for the organization, you know, because this is the future. As you know, Raheem Morris would always say that, he kind of would refer to Michael Penix as the future. I think that while Kirk Cousins was the starter, there was some hesitancy from the organization to really speak publicly about Penix a whole lot because they wanted the focus to kind of be on Kirk and him as the leader of this team. But now it really is a true changing of the guard moment. Of course, earlier than I think anybody inside that building would have wanted, or even some of the fans, because it, you know, that means that things aren't going as well as you would have hoped. But I think there's a lot of hope behind Michael Penix and what he can do for this offense, especially the way it's looked in these last 3 weeks, which has just been completely substandard and an unsustainable way to go forward, and that's ultimately why they made the move. But I think it should be a Falcons offense that is exciting, dynamic in a way that it hasn't been this last month plus with Kirk Cousins, especially. Not that, you know, Michael Penix is going to be a guy who's running around, but he will at least be able to escape pressures at times, be able to move around in the pocket at times to create some throwing lanes for him. And when he does throw it, I'm hoping to see him throw it down the field. That's what I think. That's what I expect to see, at least. You know, Zach Robinson, the offensive coordinator, said that you know, he has attributes that we plan to activate, which I thought was an interesting way to say they're going to chuck it deep, I think, quite often. And it should open up the field for some of these receivers. So I'm just interested to see how all that goes.
You know, if this franchise, when they came back on – let's rewind this, okay? They signed Kirk Cousins. They give him $100 million guaranteed. They go into the draft. They're at number eight. They fly out to Seattle because they had gone to the combine to see Michael Penix. And Fontenot and Zach Robinson and Raheem Morris had gone to the – and gone, oh, my God, this guy's really – and then they started thinking, is he as good as we think he is?
Right.
So they fly to Seattle and they work him out in the rain in a private workout. And they get back on the plane to fly back to Atlanta, and they're sitting on the plane going, oh, my God, how do we sell this to Mr. Blank? This guy is the real deal. He's better than Jaden Daniels. He's better than Bo Nix. He's the best quarterback available in the draft. He's better than Caleb Williams. How do we sell him on this concept? And so they get him here, and when they do, Kirk Cousins is not happy.
Yeah.
Because he knows that they just drafted his replacement. And so maybe notwithstanding the last 5 weeks, Kirk Cousins, the plan was always to kind of move towards Michael Penix next year. So now you get a three-game kind of ramp up to that this year, which puts him into a different kind of category starting the year next year. But that's not what this is about. This is about that kid that they said was going to be the best quarterback in the draft coming in, and right now winning games for them,
yeah,
Joe.
Yeah.
He's got to win games for them.
Yeah, and I didn't think that they would put him in this position. I don't think it's necessarily a bad position for someone like him to be in. I think it is kind of a it's an interesting place where the Falcons are right now because, you know, if you just look at the odds are that this team is not going to make the playoffs. If you just look at the projections, just purely statistically, they're on the outside looking in right now. They need to win all the rest of their games, and they need help. So, there's not the expectation that Michael Penix has to kind of get them just across this final stretch to secure their playoff spot. He's got to play this team well. He's got to play well enough to get this team into it. But I think that takes some of the pressure off to an extent because it's not like there's something for him to lose here. This team is already on the outside of where they want to be. So I think it's actually a good situation to put a player like Penix in. I didn't think it would come this soon. I thought honestly, John, that basically, there would be more or less a handshake agreement with Kirk Cousins. Like, listen, we're going to give you the opportunity to get this team into the playoffs. And ultimately, I think it was a smart move by the Falcons to take over the situation and say, if we were to play you these last three games, we weren't making the playoffs. So we're going to cut that experiment short a little bit. And I think it'll be interesting to see how he performs with the circumstances. I don't think that, he is, like you said, he's kind of one of these power arm kind of guys. But he's very much not an Anthony Richardson who had, minimal college experience. This guy has a ton of college experience.
So, 5 years.
Yeah, at multiple programs, multiple coaches, schemes, all that kind of stuff. I thought what he was doing at Washington as well, obviously you see him throwing all these passes to guys like Rome Odunze and whatever. I was really impressed just watching him operate that offense. It is an offense that has a lot of shifts and motions in it. I'm sure the verbiage to get out some of those play calls are pretty complex, and I think that he'll be better suited to be able to handle that at this stage of his young career. And, we'll see how it goes. But the player that I think that really is the best comp for at least what the Falcons kind of hope he can be is a Matthew Stafford. That kind of guy who can stand in the pocket with the big arm and deliver, maybe not be the most accurate quarterback, but has an arm and an ability to deliver that is where he can actually reach parts of the field that a lot of other quarterbacks in the NFL cannot.
Wait for Tailgate Show is brought to you in part by Ticketmaster. Ticketmaster is the official ticket marketplace of the Falcons of the NFL, and there'll be a lot of fans here today just to check it out. Of course, the New York Giants come into this game. They are a bad football team. And sort of like the Raiders, though, they were a bad football team. And, boy, you had to hold on for dear life on a double Hail Mary from DoorDash Dez to win that game in Las Vegas.
I was going to say pathetic. It's pathetic. It was a pathetic performance from the Falcons' offense. It was a great performance from their defense and the special teams. And except for the field goal miss. But the fact that this defense and special teams set up the Falcons to start four drives inside Raiders territory,
right,
and that Falcons' offense never took a snap from inside the red zone.
I know
that is absolutely brutal.
Right.
It doesn't get any worse than that. So. Yes, clearly a performance that I think that the offense knows they need to bounce back from. And certainly the kind of opponent you would like to do it against the Giants. They can rush the passer. That is the one thing that they can do. Having said that, they're without maybe their best pass rusher, which is their interior defensive lineman, Dexter Lawrence, who's out for the year. But they still have guys like Kayvon Thibodeau, some other guys on the edge that can really get after it and cause some havoc. And so we'll see how Penix and this offensive line deals with that, especially the fact that Penix is a left-handed quarterback, which makes Caleb McGarry now your blindside tackle for the rest of the season at least. We'll see how he gets on with that, how the Falcons might help him out with some scheme, maybe Charlie Warner kind of attached to his right hip there to help him out. But it should be a team that this offense is able to have success on.
It is the Wade Ford Tailgate Show brought to you by Wade Ford, Atlanta's Ford dealer. John and Joe sitting outside in the cold outside of Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Hopefully it's a hot day. Roof will be closed, of course. And Michael Penix Jr. in the red helmets today, Joe.
Yeah.
They're going to be wearing the real, as I call them, the real helmets because...
Yeah.
You know, in my 50 year as a Falcons fan, I grew up, they are the Blackbirds for a reason, and that's, you know, not the Dirty Birds, the Blackbirds, and the why? Because the bird on the side of the helmet is black, okay?
I love how
Blackbirds.
This has to be explained, but yeah, yes, the Falcon is a Blackbird. Yeah, no. Do you think that's a good omen that they're in the red helmets for Penix's first start tonight?
Yeah, I think it is. I'm going to go with that. Okay,
yeah.
I'm just going to roll with it. You know, I think they ought to be the permanent helmets.
We have to believe in any omens that appear.
Anybody with the Falcons hearing me, to make them permanent, please. I go back to the original helmet. I thought it was really cool when they moved to the Georgia Dome because the whole Man in Black thing, Jerry Glanville and Dion, and they went to the black helmet with at that time the etch. Falcon, it was a white etch,
right,
and it was like kind of cool looking.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, that's fun. It's a new stadium, new look, Man in Black, and all that. And then that wore off real quick for me.
Yeah,
after a couple of years, I was like, can we go back to the original uniforms here? You know, because it honors Georgia. I mean, you have the Georgia red and black, and then you have that gold stripe that goes from, and that was added in the first year to honor Georgia Tech because they said, hey, listen, it's all Georgia colors, so they put a gold stripe down the middle to honor Georgia Tech for the black and gold. And so, it's an Atlanta helmet.
Yeah, and you know? I feel like they've played pretty well when they've worn those uniforms. So, and I certainly like them. They look nice, but I'm excited to see Penix, man. It's gonna be fun to watch
how this
offense is different.
For the last three games, who's going to benefit more from Michael Penix being the quarterback, Darnell Mooney or Kyle Pitts? Those are your two choices.
Ooh. I think it's got to be Kyle Pitts because I think Darnell Mooney had a great relationship with Kirk Cousins. I think he was honestly
Kirk couldn't get
number one
ball.
Option. I know, exactly. Especially last game. He had one target, zero catches. And I think he's been affected a little bit by maybe an Achilles. He's been dealing with an Achilles on the injury report, which we'll talk about in the 10 o'clock hour. But I wonder if that's hampered him a bit. He did have one big game against the Vikings since he's been dealing with it, but the other games since he's popped up with it have not been what he was performing to previously. But I think with the big arm, that helps Pitts down the field. I still don't think he's going to have a lot of targets. He's not going to be this Travis Kelce type of tight end, but I think with what they ask him to do, which is use his straight line speed in some of these matchups, I think Michael Penix is the kind of quarterback that can, you know, really exploit some of those and take his shots when he feels like he has one-on-one situations.
You know, isn't it interesting? They always talked about Kirk Cousins being a play-action quarterback here.
Yeah.
Isn't really Michael Penix more of the play-action quarterback because you had to respect, A, his ability to get outside and run, which freezes those linebackers, and B, this is just simply the running game, so those linebackers can't move, which, even though he's not great over the field, as you say, post routes, you know, these safeties have to commit. So.
Totally. I mean, and the Falcons love to run to that right side, so it actually sets up perfectly for a left-handed Penix to be able to run that play action to the right and then boot back out to the left on his left hand.
Right. And that's what I think. I think they'll move the pocket. I think he'll run play action and boot. There'll be a lot of naked boots going out there, and he'll be given the option to actually he can. Look, Michael Penix, I've been watching him his whole career because he started for 3 years at Indiana. Kalen DeBoer was his offensive coordinator at Indiana, became his head coach at Washington, now, of course, head coach at Alabama. And when he was at Indiana, Tom Allen, the then head coach of the Hoosiers, wanted Michael Penix to be Michael Vick, so he ran all the time.
Right.
And so that's why I was getting injured all the time.
Right.
And DeBoer said, look, you can't get injured. I need you to be a pocket passer.
Yeah.
And so, but he can run. He can really run.
Yeah.
And so his ability to get outside the pocket and get 10, 15 yards is going to be critical for this team.
But I like that as a young quarterback, that's not his priority. He knows he wants to deliver from the pocket first and foremost, which is what you just want in a young quarterback. You want, because that to me exudes a certain confidence that you have in your ability to work the ball down the field through the passing game.
All right. We have to take a break here. When we get back, does this a couple of things about this? Does this help or hurt Terry Fontenot's ability to be the general manager moving forward for the Atlanta Falcons? It's part of the discussion today as we get ready for the Falcons and the New York Giants. It is a football Sunday, cold football Sunday in Atlanta. Wade Ford Tailgate Show continues in a moment on Sports Radio 92 in the Game.
Go! Let's break it!
more Falcons coverage now. This is the Wade Ford Tailgate Show.
The Wade Ford Tailgate Show on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game is presented by Wade Ford, Atlanta's Ford dealer, and is brought to you in part by Hatfield Pork Products, the W Sauce, and Shake Shack.
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Wade Ford Tailgate Show live outside Mercedes-Benz Stadium. John Fricke, Joe Patrick, our Falcons insider, counting down to network coverage at 11 o'clock. Chris Goforth, Mike Johnson with the network pregame show. Wes and Dave on the call at 1 o'clock. And, of course, Rob Tribble with the reaction to Michael Penix's debut with all of you on the Falcons flyover following the game. It's all ahead on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. And this is a big game for the Atlanta Falcons. They are 7-7. Ugly as that win was, one of the ugliest wins I think I tweeted out, maybe the ugliest win I've seen in my 50 years as a Falcons fan.
Yeah.
But it does put them at 7-7, Joe. And now with three games to go, this game today against the Giants at Washington and Dan Quinn and that showdown coming up next week and then home back against Carolina to end it. The Falcons are alive. If they get help from the Eagles today and the Eagles beat Washington, that would make that Washington game essentially, potentially, for a wild card spot. If they get help from the Cowboys today to beat the Buccaneers and they win this game, the Falcons go back into first place with two games to go.
Yeah,
and that suddenly would control their own destiny.
Yeah, and if there is a day to scoreboard watch, it's probably today, because it feels like with the help that the Falcons are going to need from now to the end of the season to get into the playoffs, feels like that help is most likely to come today, like you mentioned, with those matchups that those teams have, especially that Eagles Commanders game, I think is the biggest one, because then that would set up, if the Commanders lose that one, the Falcons are playing in Washington next Sunday night. That game, of course, got flexed. We learned that news last week, and so it'll make the stakes of that one incredible.
If
that is basically that would be basically a playoff game, like
right,
for these two teams, whichever one loses is essentially knocked out.
Right.
And, so,
in theory, Falcons, there's still the NFC South. You could still get some help there. But, yes, for the wild card, sure. Yeah, it would absolutely set it up.
We should talk about the Bucs then, because, I don't know, John, just to me, it just feels like they're never going to lose again. That's just
Cowboys.
I tweeted this several weeks ago, and I hate to say that it's kind of proven to be very accurate. But I just said, Baker Mayfield is inevitable. He is just always going to come on at the end of a game or whenever and kind of impose his will. That Buccaneers offense is going to get what they need to win a game, whether that's 40 points or whether that's 23 or whatever it might be. It just seems like whatever they need, they get the job done. And I just can't give them enough plaudits for just being the veteran team that they are under Todd Bowles. They know exactly what they are. They're kind of like an aspirational model for what the Falcons hope to get to, just in terms of having that kind of core identity to them and a belief in the team that they can win a run of games that they need to. That team was down
dead
and out.
Water.
They were less than 20%, probably 10% maybe to make the playoffs at one point in time, right after the Falcons beat them, really.
Right.
And now they're obviously back in the front runner seat. So I don't know. For them, it's hard for me to see them slipping out of that spot. But you never know. Cowboys been frisky here lately.
Yeah, let's say Cooper Rush has been frisky. Right, exactly. He's played well. All right, let's talk a little bit. Let's go back to this, because I got to ask you a couple questions about this situation with Kirk Cousins. So Kirk Cousins, we're 6-3 after 9 games. I got a mouse in my pocket. 6-3, 3 games up. Kirk Cousins is thrown for a whole bunch. He's third in the league in touchdowns, third in the league in passing. People are starting to buzz about, could he be an NFC Offensive Player of the Year? Could he be in the MVP race? And he falls off the table in 5 games. He hits a wall and goes from Kirk Cousins to Desmond Ridder.
Yeah.
What in the world of God happened?
So, yeah, he did. And, he was still turning the ball over a little bit even before, but he was having a good he was having enough positive plays to offset some of the bad that was happening to that point in the season. That's reflected in the fact that the Falcons were 6-3 and in the driver's seat. And I think what happened, that is the ultimate mystery of this season. I've asked that question directly to Zach Robinson, Raheem Morris, and you just don't get a clear answer, obviously, and I think that they probably know some things that we don't, and they're just not going to say. I think there's probably some mental and physical things that play into this. I think from the physical aspect of it, I think the Achilles and the lack of mobility that he has coming off of that injury, I think it became apparent to defensive coordinators around that point in time that they could just come after Kirk Cousins. They didn't really need to protect themselves, in rush lanes, all these kind of things we talk about when this team is going up against quarterbacks that can get out of the pocket. The teams, and they were just blitzing, and he just did not fare well against the blitz at all this year, which is really uncharacteristic for Kirk Cousins, who usually can exploit some of those gaps that teams leave. But I think with the combination of the coverage, that they were putting over the top of some of those blitzes, it just confused Kirk Cousins, and that's why we saw him throw some bad passes. But, John, I also wonder, from the physical aspect of it, I think in that Saints game, if you recall, he got, like, blindside hit a couple times in that game. Like, really got rocked and fumbled the ball on at least a couple of them. And, I wonder if he maybe sustained something. He popped up on the injury report with a shoulder that had him as a limited participant that following week going into Denver. He said that was a clerical error, but I don't know how that happens. And so, you just have to put that out there. But I would not be surprised if there was some then limitation on not just the Achilles, but then something on the arm that was taking a little bit off, and he felt like he needed to rush his process even more to be able to deliver the ball. Speculation on my part, but for me, I can't make sense of the drop-off any other way.
Terry Fontenot, this was a hard call to make to convince Mr. Blank to spend $100 million on a guy coming off an Achilles injury. Then it was a double hard call to convince him that you were going to use the number one draft pick on a quarterback after you had paid a guy $100 million. Now you're going in there saying we have to take that guy that we paid $100 million, put him on the shelf, and put the guy in that we drafted number eight. So is Terry Fontenot on the hook here in any way for all these decisions if it doesn't pan out?
Yes, he is on the hook. He should be on the hook. He's the general manager. He is responsible for the transactions that this team makes, just like the head coach is responsible ultimately for what happens on the field, whether it's actually his fault or it's not. That's the person who holds the accountability for what happens. And so, Terry Fontenot takes accountability for this process that has really, I think, not unfolded the way they wanted. Having said that, when they did this, they were kind of always going to be in a situation where he was going to have a little bit of mess on his hands, because either Kirk Cousins plays so good that you're riding with him, but you just have this draft pick that you're not getting any value out of that's on the bench for what? Like, we could have said it was potentially 2 or 3, 4 years, maybe, even if he's playing that well, which makes you then question, what was was this the most, rational way to go about building a team? Or basically what's happened now, which is that Kirk Cousins, for whatever reason, doesn't play to the standard you expect. Michael, you have to put Michael Penix in, and then you're wasting all that money. So it was almost like a damned if you do, damned if you don't kind of situation. But I do think that there was also some pragmatism in it, which is this exact situation. You're signing a guy off an injury. I thought maybe the injury itself, the Achilles, could pop up and be a problem for that Michael Penix could basically be insurance for. Turns out it was maybe some other things that he's insurance for. But anyways, your insurance policy is coming into effect at this point, but it doesn't leave you feeling any better about the quarterback situation or, frankly, the confidence that I think a lot of fans have in Terry Fontenot at this time. And it's not even just the quarterback situation, John. I hate to say it, but it's like a lot of these draft picks are just not providing value for this team. If you go all the way back to 2021, obviously there's the Kyle Pitts. That's always a lightning rod conversation. But for me, it's more of the guys, down the roster, or ultimately down the roster, down the draft list, guys like Richie Grant, Jalen Mayfield. Remember, he was a third round pick from this team, didn't last many years. So many, I you could run the whole list, but they just, and that's why this team doesn't feel like it has a lot of depth to it. It feels like whenever you do lose a player for injury or whatnot, it feels like they are kind of depleted because you don't have those guys at the back end of the roster that you drafted in those late rounds to step up.
I agree with this. I mean, because you look at this draft class, you've got Rukororo, right? But you haven't had anything really much out of Brandon Dorlis. Now, Braylon Trice got injured and is out for the year. But at the same time, we'll find out. This draft class will rise or fall on number nine. It'll be all about him.
Right.
And yet at the same time, while I agree with this, and I've had this conversation with fans about Terry Fontenot's drafting, if number nine, all right, let's just play this out for a second. If number nine turns into a franchise quarterback, if he is the next guy in line when we start talking about Markowski and Vic and Chandler and Ryan and Penix starts to fall into that in 2, 3, 4, 5 years now. If he starts to fall in that, suddenly these draft picks that are around him, we see the best of Bijan, of Pitts, of Drake, and suddenly all these, he gets justified in, for where he's vilified. Suddenly it all kind of makes sense.
Definitely agree. And that's why I think, frankly, there's a lot riding on these last three games for Terry Fontenot that comes by way of the performance of Michael Penix. Because if Penix plays well, not only does it show that Terry Fontenot is a good evaluator of talent and whatnot and being able to identify this quarterback, but also I think you have to appreciate the cojones that move takes. And when you see a quarterback like that, again, if he is the guy, ultimately, proves out to be the guy, to have had the conviction in your belief to go out and acquire that player, despite whatever, friction it may have caused at the time, or any kind of just immediate term inefficiency, I guess, in terms of roster building that provided. But ultimately, if you get that player in at the quarterback position, you set yourself up for the long term, and it's a huge benefit to the organization. So you would have to give him credit.
I have a number of contacts and friends, from my years in the media, one of whom is a former NFL scout who I talked to on occasion. And earlier in the season, he said to me, because I was just chatting with him, I asked him about Zach Robinson. He said he believes that Zach Robinson, if Falcons fans can be patient, is going to turn into a top-level NFL offense coordinator. Matter of fact, he thinks he can be a head coach.
Yeah.
And so this is an opportunity for Zach Robinson now, because he has been limited because of the lack of mobility of his starting quarterback, to kind of, as you said, put some wrinkles in, and let's see what Zach Robinson can do with an offense too. So I think there's that plays into all this.
No doubt about it. And I think it will be very interesting to see how the passing game plays out in general, but how these receivers benefit from a field that is kind of more unlocked for them, right? Like, Drake London might be running some go routes and be catching some balls downfield on the sidelines today, where he hasn't really been doing that all year.
And he's been more of a possession guy, right?
Yeah. And, Kirk Cousins wants to deliver to him more over the middle and some of those intermediate areas. And so how effective will he be in some of those situations? Same with we mentioned Kyle Pitts earlier in the show. Do you get kind of any added benefit out of that? But, just from the fact that I think this field is just going to be more open. And also a guy that I'm keeping my eye on, he's going to get the rock today a lot in Bijan Robinson. They're going to really rely on this run game, Tyler Algier as well. But I'm also interested to see how much space those two players, especially Bijan, have in the checkdown game. If you do have these receivers running deep and the Giants defense is expecting Penix to, unleash that arm and throw it, does then Bijan have a lot more room to run and operate if he's catching a checkdown, because, the receivers and the coverage is all, 30 yards downfield? It could benefit him as well in those areas.
Yeah, especially if you're going to be throwing, suddenly the screen game might become
exactly,
something, because you got guys turning and running.
Because it felt like these opposing defenses just had the clamps
down,
on,
right?
Especially
they,
these last four
eight,
or five
eight
weeks.
Eight or nine guys in the box.
They're not afraid of Kirk Cousins beating them deep.
All right, exactly. It is the Wade Ford Tailgate Show, brought to you by Wade Ford, Atlanta's Ford dealer, outside Mercedes-Benz Stadium today. The Atlanta Falcons and the New York Giants, as we count down to, we will look around the NFL. I'll catch you up on what's already taken place this week in the league as we count down towards kickoff. 1 o'clock kick at Mercedes-Benz, live on your home with the Falcons, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Go! Break it!
More Falcons coverage now. This is the Wade Ford Tailgate Show.
The Wade Ford Tailgate Show on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game is presented by Wade Ford, Atlanta's Ford dealer, and is brought to you in part by Hatfield Pork Products, the W Sauce, and Shake Shack.
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Wade Ford Tailgate Show outside Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Big day of football for the Atlanta Falcons, who are 7-7 on the year, taking on a struggling Giants team, 2-12 on the season. Giants team that's starting to talk, their fans are talking about Cam Ward is what they're talking about.
Oh, is that right?
One pick, yeah.
Yeah.
They were not too happy. They were rooting for Desmond Ridder to hit that shot last week.
Right, exactly. It's a race to the bottom.
Race to the bottom.
For too many teams in the NFL. We were talking about this off the air, but incredible the amount of terrible teams, or at least teams with terrible records at this point. And a lot of teams with really good records, too. It's kind of the haves and have-nots.
Eight teams that are 3-11 or worse.
Ooh, that is crazy. 7-10 ain't getting you the eighth pick anymore.
Nope. So let's talk about the NFL. We've had three games already this week. The Chargers on Thursday beat the Broncos. That race is on now for Jim Harbaugh for the playoffs. The Chiefs go to 14-1. They beat the Texans. The Chiefs managed to get wins. And they got another call, too, that everybody's like, oh, my God. But hey, okay, credit to them. They're 14-1.
Yeah.
well, as I like to say, they're 6-1, but 8-0 in referee assisted victories.
Right. Still haven't scored 30 points, I believe, in a game this year.
RAVs.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
It's a new stat, RAVs.
RAVs.
Referee victories. The Ravens, how about Lamar Jackson? Everybody talks about, look, and I don't take anything away from Josh Allen, but Lamar Jackson, dude.
I know. I've got him on my fantasy team, and so that's like why I follow his stats. Ridiculous.
They are.
He throws so many touchdowns. He hardly ever throws an interception.
He had one yesterday.
But just incredibly accurate. Like, I know it wasn't this game, but like last week, he had more touchdown passes than incompletions in the game. He had 4 incompletions and 5 touchdown passes. It must be terrifying to go against that Ravens offense, just with the way he can move the ball around.
Yeah, this Lamar Jackson is one of the perfect. There are multiple, obviously, top Brady, 6th rounder and all that kind of stuff. But Lamar Jackson is one of those, we could have had this guy in the draft or that guy in the draft. You know, Lamar went 32nd.
Everybody was
the last pick of the first round, okay? Everybody missed on him until he fell to Baltimore at 32nd. So don't come at me about you could have had this guy or that guy. Let's talk about today. Sunday, 1 o'clock games today. Lions and the Bears in Chicago. It will be nice and toasty warm, sure, for that one. There's been a lot of talk about Caleb Williams and how he hasn't lived up to being the number one pick. How much of that is on him? How much was on, you know, the previous coach? How much was on the offensive line? But he has not been the number one pick.
What do you think? What do you about Caleb Williams?
Yeah,
I think it's a mix of both.
Here's what I think. I think that the best quarterback in this draft is starting today for the Atlanta Falcons.
Oh, wow. Spicy.
That's what I think.
Okay.
I think this guy's going to be the starter.
Well, I mean, it's interesting. I think
that's what they said, too, by the way. On the plane back, they said, better than Caleb Williams.
That's right. I mean, yeah, they had him as the number two player on their board overall, the Falcons did, with Michael Penix. It will be interesting to see how he performs. I'm interested, John, because of how well these rookie quarterbacks are playing, generally speaking, across the board. And Michael Penix, is he actually the best one of those? I guess we'll see. But, yeah, Caleb, you know, it's tough because I feel like there's a lot of people who want to totally kind of cape for him, basically, like, defend him and you know, say he's great. Like, I think that some of the mistakes we're seeing him are his fault. I don't think he's been well coached, though, in Chicago. So I think there's a lot of blame to go around up there for how things are going.
Also in the 1 o'clock hour, the Browns are in Cincinnati against the Bengals. The Titans are in Indianapolis against the Colts. The Rams are in New York against the Jets, who are on a big win streak, one game in a row.
Good for them.
the Eagles and the Commanders. There's the game that we all are focused in on here. Fly, Eagles, fly, right? Eagles are 12-2.
Absolutely.
Who's one of the two?
I know, right? Isn't that crazy? The Kirk Cousins-led Falcons. Ripping their hearts out on the road, you know, in the link.
In the
on
fourth
Monday
quarter.
Night football. Right. And Saquon dropping that pass to allow it to happen.
Yeah, right.
Who is otherwise having like an MVP caliber year this year. But this would be the one to watch. It's kind of unfortunate that it's on at the same time as this Falcons game, because otherwise, if you're a Falcons fan, this would be like standalone TV because of the rooting interest that you would have in the Eagles. And it's a good thing that the Eagles, you know, despite being 12-2, still a lot to play for, because like we've said, a lot of bad teams and a lot of teams with really good records that still want to get those advantages.
Number one seed too,
right?
Exactly. Yeah, it's still on the line. The Eagles do have something to play for here. Also in the 1 o'clock hour, the Arizona Cardinals, who desperately need a win. They're 7-7 going into Carolina, and they really need a win in that NFC West.
Yeah.
4 o'clock window, Patriots are at the Bills, supposed to be about 10 degrees in Buffalo.
I feel bad for those tailgate hosts.
Jaguars are in Las Vegas against that Raiders team. That should be
who?
Ooh, Jaguars at Raiders. Ooh, man, can we ship that game to London?
If nobody watches this game, will it have actually happened?
Right?
You know,
49ers are in Miami against the Dolphins. A couple of times, disappointing years for them. And then 8:20 tonight, the big one.
Yeah. Talk about another standalone game to watch.
Yep. Well, we will be watching that. Mm-hmm. You know, I hate rooting for the Cowboys because I don't like the Cowboys. But, you know, I'm going to be rooting like mad for Cooper Rush and the Cowboys.
Yep. Yep, you have to. I mean, you know, this is one of the two routes, basically, for the Falcons to get into the playoffs. It's either going to be by way of the Commanders' spot that they currently hold or the Buccaneers' spot they currently hold. And so this is maybe the better one to have. I think you'd obviously rather win the division because then you get the home field advantage or you get the home game.
Plus, you take all the variables of, even though the Falcons at this point, if they beat the Giants, they own so many tiebreakers because their wins are, you know, NFC wins. But still, at the same time, beating the Commanders, I mean, their NFC record is going to be, if they win out, their NFC record is going to be sterling.
Right.
be as good as the Eagles.
Right, yeah.
Well, they'll actually hold a tiebreaker over the Eagles.
Yeah. right. Yeah, that's a good point. Who would have thunk that? But, yeah, definitely one to watch here. I got to be honest, I'm expecting the Buccaneers because what we were talking about in the earlier segments we'll see.
Yeah,
Cowboys
we'll
been frisky here lately. So.
Yeah, but if they do lose, if the Falcons win today and they do lose and tomorrow morning, you're waking up and you're saying Falcons are in first place.
Yeah.
With two games to go. And by the way, if Michael Penix has a big game and the Falcons are in first and you're going to be going to play Dan Quinn next week, the ratings will be baffled.
Huge. It's crazy the way that this Falcons season is swinging, like the ups and the downs. Like Kirk Cousins was saying, we were good for a while, we were good, and then, hey, we're not good.
No, right, you're not good.
Yeah, that's a whole, whole other side story there. But, things could, as bad as things have felt for this Falcons organization these last couple weeks, having been knocked out of that playoff spot, you know, things could turn around just as quickly.
And then Monday Night Football this week, the Swampers are up in Green Bay to play the Packers. You ever been to Lambeau?
I've never been. I want to go
so bad. Oh, it is. You do bucket list
but
stuff.
But if I go, it's got to be for like a, you know, December. I want a cold game. I want something. I want the true experience.
Yeah, I went up there. It was early season. It was actually a nice, pleasant night in Green Bay. And it was the first time I had been to Lambeau. I fell in love. If you are a person who likes like Fenway Park and Wrigley Field, Lambeau is it.
I've been to a soccer stadium in London when a team is really old. You know, the stadium is built in like the 1800s or whatever. It was an interesting experience just going into that one. Like the corridors are all very small. You're going through like a tight kind of turnstile area. That's kind of how I imagine Lambeau being. But
yeah, it is, and it's also bigger than you expect it to be.
Is that right?
It's a big stadium. Mm. And it's just, but it's really cool. It just drips NFL.
Yeah.
And, you know, and in that little area of, yeah, I mean, I parked in an Ace Hardware parking lot, you know?
Yeah.
You know, because it's in a neighborhood.
It's in an, you know? That's a cool aspect.
And they have a cool little area that is right next to Titletown, which is right next to the stadium with, you know, shops and restaurants and stuff like that.
Right.
But it's really just a neat place to go to. If you ever get a chance as an NFL fan, I can't imagine. I went, okay, I love this stadium.
Love it.
Yeah. Love everything about it.
Which is great because when you contrast that to like a place like Soldier Field where they've done so many modifications over the years. I know I've got like my godfather is a, you know, Bears fan from Chicago and he hates Soldier Field now. And it's like it's a shame that you turn, you know, what is it, like a relic basically of the NFL into something that people kind of despise because of what you've done to it.
Yep, right.
And that hasn't been done in Lambeau. Yeah.
All right, so back to our game today here. We talk, and because of the nature of quarterbacks, certainly it's been the discussion here. I'm trying to figure out here, one of the other things I want to see in the last three games, and depending on how this all plays out, Joe, is the coaching staff, because I don't know what the hell's going on in our secondary, and I want to see it today. Is Drew Locke starting? Is that what?
I believe so.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. They got like nine quarterbacks after Daniel Jones.
Right.
You know, is it Tommy DeVito?
Look at some Tommy Gutlets, you know.
Okay. Who the hell knows, right? Who's playing quarterback today for the Giants?
They could get somebody from the stands.
Okay, right, exactly. So I don't know what's happened on our back end, but it's not good.
Yeah.
You've got Justin Simmons, Jesse Bates, and A.J. Terrell. You got three guys who can play, and suddenly you got guys who are like, they're running around looking up in the sky and trying to count stars like they're kids out there in a planetarium. I have no idea what they're doing.
Yeah. I think they've been okay. The Vikings game was
a disaster.
Brutal. That was brutal. And, you know, it exposed them to an extent because the Falcons were really trying to get after the passer there and Sam Darnold, and they were bringing the blitzes, and those were the plays where they were really getting exposed. Those ugly ones where you saw players falling down or mistracking the ball, it was when they were just in one-on-one coverage down the field and didn't have any kind of help. And also, you know, I think that something that came out of that game from Jesse Bates, who's, you know, one of those guys you really rely on and depend on, is him just trying to do too much. And Jerry Gray, the assistant head coach on defense and a special teams kind of guru, secondary kind of guru, Yeah, he said, you know, Jesse's got to understand, you only get paid one check. You know, like, you don't get paid to do other people's jobs. You get paid to do your job. And so you just got to focus. If he does his job the best he can, he's going to make plays for this team. Mm-hmm. But I think that the fact that he is feeling like he's got to do more is evidence of, you know, there are kind of lacking attributes from players in that secondary, especially when I just like look at his partner Justin Simmons, just does not have the range that he really had early in his career. Still has that playmaking ability. We saw him come up with an interception that was kind of thrown right to him last night from Desmond, or on Monday night from Desmond Ridder, but still has the ability to make some of those interceptions, but just doesn't have the ability to stay with some of these top quality wide receivers in the NFL. And I don't think that's going to play so much of a problem this week as it would against the Commanders on Sunday night next week.
Yeah, because you got Jaden Daniels and you got Terry McLaurin. I mean, you've got a team that can really move the ball down the field.
And I also want to say that I just want to throw this out there. Jimmy Lake talks about A.J. Terrell like he is like a top-tier elite corner in the NFL.
Right.
I think that he has had a quietly really good season. He hasn't had a lot to show for it because he has not been getting targeted, which I think is kind of evidence of how good he is. But it's also evidence of the fact that the
other
opposing
side
offenses, yeah, exactly. See weaknesses where he's not. So why
Clark
not
Phillips
go away? From
not
him?
You know
exactly.
I mean, and then even D. Alford at times is like lost.
Yeah, that's
out
been.
There.
And he kind of lost his playing time last week after what happened in Minnesota.
You know, so there are other issues on this ball club that need to be addressed.
Yeah.
Obviously,
yeah.
And you try and do your best to hide them. It was almost like when they were blitzing, and you know, everybody was complaining. It was like that you could almost hear somebody in the Falcons after the Minnesota game say, "Well, everybody in town wanted us to get after the passer, so this is what happens when we do."
Right.
You know, I mean, but our answer back to them is that's not our issue. Our issue is that you guys have got Simmons and Bates and Terrell, you got to play better.
Yeah.
And you got Antonio Hamilton, you brought in veterans, play better.
Yeah, and you know who came in actually I thought helped this team and provided value by basically being the guy who covered Brock Bowers, mm-hmm. which was Kevin King, which is nice to see from him.
Well, I don't understand why Kevin King coming out of training, camp wasn't out of preseason, wasn't part of this club.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. I mean, he has been with the team because he was on the practice squad coming out, but I'm with you. I thought he was going to make the 53-man roster,
right.
And because you can see that kind of versatility that he brings as a safety corner kind of
plus
combo
he's
guy.
Energy, he hits hard.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he seems to not get lost.
Yeah.
You know, where other guys get lost.
Yep.
And, you know, maybe he's not the greatest, but he's solid enough.
He's got a lot of pedigree from, like, where he was drafted. And,
well,
you know,
he was considered to be, coming out of college, one of the best.
Right. He was just kind of out of the game.
When he was up at Green Bay, they were talking about this guy could be a long-time Pro Bowler.
Right. So, happy to see him provide some value for this team. Maybe he, you know, we'll see how much he plays. I think he'll probably continue to play in that nickel spot today.
Yeah, well, and it's good to see that the pass rush is, you know, at least they've let these guys loose a little bit. They've got a little taste of it over the last couple, 3 weeks here, and hopefully that continues today.
Arnold Ebiketie is,
I know, suddenly, wait.
Now, like, I think I heard.
Where were you?
I was with ESPN reporter Mark Raimondi Saturday night, or yesterday. No, I'm sorry, not last night, the night before. He was telling me, I believe it's over the last 2 weeks, Ebiketie has the second highest pass rush win rate in the NFL. Only Micah Parsons beats him.
I know. Where were you all year? Where have you been?
I don't know, but he's learning. If he can keep it up.
Learning? It's your third year here.
Well, yeah. But, you know, some guys, it takes some time to develop. I think especially for him, like, speed rushers sometimes struggle with, like, the size and power of NFL offensive tackles. But, you know, hey, if he can keep this going, then the Falcons really have a player on their hands.
All righty. We'll take a quick break here. Hour down here when we get back, the injury report for both teams, and we'll get an update from Joe on just where the Falcons stand coming into this game. 3 hours away from kickoff at Mercedes-Benz, Falcons in the debut game of Michael Penix against the New York Giants. Live on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.